Into the other's gang, two sisters, both curious and strange. A likely duo and they witty from the brain. It's the magic hour, Mercedes and Jay.
This is part two. If you missed part one of this episode, you can find it in our podcast library now. If you're all caught up, welcome back.
I was curious if you could speak to how vaccinations might affect our immune system as well.
Okay. So, you know, I've heard a lot of people that are coming from my perspective say, and a lot of people don't believe them, I'm not exactly anti-vaccination. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that there is something to be said for inducing a specific immune response. And, you know, we successfully eradicated smallpox off the planet. And, you know, that was a disease that killed many, many people. And so this was a good thing. So, you know, vaccines just as a whole are not necessarily bad for our immune system. What I do think is harmful to our immune system is when there are multiple vaccinations that each have their own adjuvants and preservatives in them that are given to children with very young, underdeveloped, and in some, mm-hmm. some cases, undeveloped immune systems. You're mm-hmm. giving them so many vaccines at one time. I think that that actually has a deleterious effect mm-hmm. on our health, you know, and on our immune system. And I think in the case of now, the situation we find ourselves in with COVID, you know, it's a pretty scary prospect to be thinking about a vaccine against an RNA virus, because mm-hmm. for one, they mutate so rapidly yeah. that, mm-hmm. you know, if you make one, it's not necessarily going to be effective to protect mm-hmm. you against the strain that's there even a few months later. Mm-hmm. And it's notoriously hard to do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you make an antibody to the viral antigens, but it doesn't inactivate the virus, but it almost makes a bigger thing, you know, your antibody bound to an antigen of the virus that then your own system can recognize as foreign. And so it can, you know, I fear that rushing a COVID viral vaccine to market could be dangerous, because it might start some autoimmune conditions in people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's more where my fear lies, being forced to do something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people feel the same way, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I'm not so certain that this agenda is going to be successful.
Yeah. I think it's really critical, though, just to reiterate the piece you said there about our thoughts affecting our immune system and being such a big piece. Like, we want to have all these external ways that we can mm-hmm. pump up our immune system, you know, and be ready and take the vitamin C and do all the things. But our thoughts, you know, I know people probably dismiss this. I know people listening are probably going, yeah, that can't hold that much clout on my immune system. But I know it does. I, you know, I feel it in my system the same way whenever I'm feeling shitty and stressed and whatever. Yeah. You feel
that's the only time I get sick too.
Yeah.
When I have stress in my life. So,
yeah. So there's all kinds of evidence in your life. If you're listening to this and you're trying to, you know, prove that right or wrong, just like, Dr. McDougall's here saying it, think for yourself. You know, think mm-hmm. critically yeah. for yourself about what your own experiences have been with your immune system and your thoughts and what is going on in your life when you got really sick, maybe. Mm-hmm. Okay, so to move us on though from that, I want to talk to you about this study of the healing properties of water that you've been recently immersed in. So can you explain to us how structured water is fundamental to cellular vitality and what exactly structured water is? And maybe even go into the do's and don'ts with water.
Yeah, water is an incredible topic. We're 60% water by weight in our body, but actually, because water is such a small molecule, we're 99% water by molecules.
Wow. And
that's really hard to imagine, but it's like, you know, because we have other molecules that are so large.
Okay.
And the water molecules are so small that there's almost not a place in the body where they're, where they don't exist.
Right.
Wow. You know, so you, of course you have water in your bloodstream and water in your lymphatic fluid and cerebral spinal fluid, but you know, you have structured water, which I'll talk about, inside your cells, and you have water molecules kind of intercalating, you know, within other molecules. So like, for example, imagine your double helical DNA, you've got water wrapping all throughout it, you know, so in between the bonds, you have water, and it's just, and it actually is structuring in a helical form all the way around the DNA spirals.
So we're just swimming all the time.
Water is
or a human submarine.
Yeah. And like inside our cells, you have these little things called microtubules, which you can almost think of as the scaffolding inside of our cells.
Mm-hmm.
And microtubules can connect to microtubules in neighboring cells. And inside, it's full of water. And water is actually thought to be kind of almost like a superconductor within the microtubules. And that is one of the ways that information is traveling quickly from one cell to another throughout the body. And then every cell of our body is anchored down to what you could say a basement membrane, or like a matrix. And that extracellular matrix is mostly water. And so there's, water is everywhere in the body. And water can exist in various forms, we know. You know, we've learned, you know, you've got the solid ice cube and steam and liquid water, but we're learning that there is a fourth phase of water, and that's like a gel, and that is the structured form of water. And microscopically, if you're looking at it, it's like sheets of water molecules lined up in a particular way that almost looks like a honeycomb. And so you've got a sheet of these honeycomb water molecules on, and then another sheet on top of that, and another sheet on top of that. And you can see these layers lining up, you know, for the millions and millions of layers.
Mm-hmm.
And water molecules will line up like that along interfaces within the body. So on the outside of your cell membrane, on the inside of your cell membrane, on the outside of your intracellular organelles, even within the intracellular organelles, water structures itself like this. And it actually does, it's no longer H2O, it becomes something different. It's actually H3O2. And that what happens when it turns like that is it has to pump a proton out of this zone of structure. And so it becomes negatively charged in the structure zone. And then there's a zone of positive charges outside of that. And that charge separation sets up like a battery effect.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to learn that that battery effect is responsible for fueling a lot of what's happening in the body. You know, so it's fueling the movement of your red blood cells through your narrow capillaries, and, you know, fueling some of the chemical reactions that are happening.
Wow.
So it's super complex and a deep and fascinating subject. But I mean, to suffice it to say, it's one of the most important elements in our body. And I think about, you know, communication with the blueprint, and I feel like structured water within the body amplifies the exchange of energy and information with the field. So it's kind of like a conduit between our biology and the energy and information that's coming from the unified field through our blueprint. So without water, you know, we would be exchanging a lot less with the environment that we emerge from.
So this, when you're talking about structured water, that's the water that has decided to align itself with parts of our bodies, our molecules, our all the places in our body that use water as a conductor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And so then people talk a lot about different technologies that structure water that we would consume.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so when you think about water in nature, how it typically, how, you know, if it were as nature intended, you know, water would be kind of bubbling up from deep layers of the earth and mm-hmm. traversing different mineral layers and whatnot on its way up to the surface in a mountain spring or something like that. And then, you know, it'd be going down a mountain spring and it would be moving over the rocks and kind of eddying and, you know, swirling and all of that. That water that we would pull out of that spring, let's say, and, you know, if nature was as pristine as it used to be, would be structured to a degree.
It's basically prepared for us to consume it by that point.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And what we've learned is that water also retains information, and it retains information of everything that it comes in contact with. So if it really were bubbling up from the earth as nature intended, you know, and going through all the different strata and, you know, the mineral content of the different layers of the earth, it would be imbued with all of the mineral frequencies and things like that it contacted. And
even the sunshine.
And then the sunshine would affect it once it comes up to the surface. So mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, ideally that's what we should be drinking. And so we're not, so we have to figure out like, how do we come?
Yeah.
How can we almost like recapitulate that? How can we recreate that perfect water that we really should be consuming? Yeah.
And what is the difference when you're having bottled water? What is the difference? Cause I know that's a lot of people, it's just the easy route.
Yeah. And it all depends on where does that bottled water come from? Because mm-hmm. some of it is reverse osmosis water that's, you know, then put in a bottle. Some of it is from a spring. And, you know, there's other purification methods that are being used. So you have to ask, like, okay, well, where did that water come from? And how was it made?
Treated.
You know, treated, yeah. treated mm-hmm. I guess is a better way to say it. And then, you want to say, what's happening when it's in the plastic bottle?
That's my. And that's what I more think.
It's in a truck that's baking in the sun, and you know, and then it's sitting in the grocery store for a long time before you drink it. So, we for convenience are using bottled water, but I think in the perfect world, we should all have home systems and things like that. Purify our own water.
What do you have a recommendation on that?
I do. But you know, right now one of my goals is to try to make something that's affordable for people.
Yeah.
Like the one I have in my house is really expensive.
Yeah.
I would love to just rattle off like 10 recommendations. Right now I would say even the zero water from Bed Bath and Beyond, you know,
that's what I use.
That's a good one. And then you could put it on a structuring device of some sort. That would help you before you drink it. But stay tuned. We'll have some.
Okay. Good. I'm glad there's some hope in the future for water. Oh, good. Okay. So, if you guys are listening, you haven't noticed yet, energetic technologies are kind of your niche. And the services you offer are super amazing. And it's exciting to know that these even exist. So can you give us a general overview of some of those services that you offer? And I just want to note that the BAH and the ACMOS are two of the ones that we were most intrigued for knowing more about. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, the BAH stands for Bioresonance Analysis of Health. And I learned this from a doctor that developed it, Dr. Thomas Schultz. He's practicing in New York, but he's originally from Poland. And he he learned how to utilize this device called a Lecker antenna, which is an instrument that's actually well known in the field of physics. It's a handheld, non-electronic instrument that is a wire on a sliding shunt.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had one I could show you guys. But anyway, you can basically ask yes or no questions with it.
Okay.
Mm. And you can ask a lot of other things too. You can measure the kind of the energetic vibration of things with this device. So this device was originally developed in the late 1800s by an Austrian physicist named Ernst Lecker, and it was originally developed to measure subtle fluctuations in the Earth's electromagnetic field. Mm.
Okay.
But anyway, Dr. Schultz adapted it to measuring the health of a human being. And so you can either have a person hold a mass that's connected to this device, or you can actually take a drop of blood of a person and put it on a slide.
Mm.
And the blood contains all the information of the person, because through the concept of quantum entanglement, you know, the blood is in communication with the body itself. And some interesting experiments, just on a side note, were done by William Tiller at Stanford, where he sent some people's blood, you know, so they had a whole group of people, and he sent a sample of their blood to Edinburgh, Scotland, and then did experiments where he exposed the person to kind of to different sorts of images, and then measured the response of the blood halfway across the world. So we see that the person and their blood is entangled, and
wow, and they could see a correlation.
Absolutely. So anyway,
those spooky particles at a distance, is that the theory?
Yeah, exactly. So with this, I can ask yes or no questions of the person and person's innate intelligence, let's say. And it is, so Dr. Schultz devised this algorithm of question asking so that you can kind of cover a really broad swath look at someone's health. You know, looking at, do they have heavy metals? Do they have vitamin deficiencies, mineral deficiencies, hormone imbalances? Do they have infectious diseases? And if it's a yes, is it a viral infection or a parasitic infection or a bacteria or, you know, then I'm looking at how much is emotional stress playing a role? Are they exposed to electromagnetic fields? How much is that playing a role? Is there any sort of geopathic stress where they're living? You know, do they have some deep-seated psycho-spiritual stress? Is that a big factor? You know, and I'm looking at, you know, what organ is most dysfunctional at this time, and what's their level of overall toxicity? So I'm just kind of doing this kind of broad yes or no questioning till I kind of come up with a set of underlying factors that are at play with a person's health. Let's say they have Parkinson's disease. Well, is this Parkinson's because of glyphosate, or is it because of heavy metal exposure? Do they have like a large degree of manganese in their body? Do they have small intestinal overgrowth or a lot of intestinal parasites? Do they have Lyme disease? Do they have, you know, any of the tick-borne co-infections or viral reactivation? And is it a set of all those factors in this particular case? And so then I'm looking at then, how do I devise a treatment protocol? And I'm asking their body. And because, you know, there might be 30 ways to detox mercury out of a person. Right. And some of those are not compatible with their system and would create a lot of dissonance in their system. So I'm looking at what is the best way to proceed. Or maybe it's not time to do mercury detox. Maybe I have to first treat their gut and, you know, open up pathways of elimination, and then I can start the detox of mercury. And so it's a way of having a conversation with their body where I can get the real information. And then a lot of times I back it up, because I've been doing this now for so many years, is that if I find, oh, lo and behold, this person with chronic fatigue syndrome actually has an infected root canal, I will send them to the biological dentist to have a three-dimensional CAT scan to verify that. And sure enough, they have that, they treat that. And it it helps them tremendously.
What's the accuracy rate with this type of thing?
Well, I think it differs depending on the practitioner, but mm-hmm. I feel like my accuracy rate is extremely high. You know, it's just because I've had, you know, years now of correlating the energetic testing with the actual testing. And it's just that it hones a little bit the testing that I go ahead and do. Because, you know, sometimes someone comes in with a complex medical problem and there's multiple underlying factors. It could be a $15,000 workup if I were just going to test every possibility.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so it's a way of saying, okay, this person doesn't need to go to the biological dentist for that three-dimensional CAT scan, right. But this person does, and this person I should go ahead and do heavy metal testing on, and this person needs a small bowel overgrowth test. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. like I can kind of hone it down to let's you know, of course, using my clinical judgment and intuition, and then that mm-hmm. data to direct the analysis.
Is mm-hmm. the actual testing, is it, first of all, is it exhausting for the patient because you're tapping into these energy lines? Is there any kind
not
of
not at all
no
not at all
I wonder, is it related to like the biomeridian system, the way that we would think about how energy flows through the body, like in a acupuncturist's office where they're tapping in? Are you tapping into the same system?
You know, I'm doing that quite a bit when I'm doing an OCMOS treatment.
Oh, okay.
So the OCMOS is very, it uses the same instrument. So the Lecker antenna.
Uh-huh.
And now, whereas the BAH is more diagnostic, the OCMOS is more therapeutic.
Okay.
So with this, I'm first doing baseline measurements on the person's energetic field. So I'm looking at, is it balanced or imbalanced? And I'm testing at various frequencies how their field is balanced. And if it's imbalanced, then I go through this process of asking their bodies, well, what pieces of misinformation are throwing their field off? Is it, you know, so then I'll be going through again an algorithm of questions, and, you know, let's say it's heavy metals. Mm-hmm. So then I can actually draw the signature of heavy metals out of the system. Mm. It doesn't mean that it's out for good. You know, if they still have a huge body burden of mercury, it, you know, mm-hmm. the signature is going to come back. But let's say, you know, when you make a homeopathic solution, the water retains the signature of what it was exposed to. So I'm going to do a little aside for a moment.
Sure.
You know, you take a glass of water and you've got, put some magnesium in there and shake it up. And then you take a small portion of that, you put it in another glass of water, you shake that up, and then you dilute it down, 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 till there's no more molecules of magnesium left in the sample,
mm-hmm.
or atoms, I should say. And it will still retain the signature of magnesium.
Mm.
Okay, so...
So it's almost, it's like a residual of intent.
It's residual energetic dissonance from once having had that there, or
okay.
or let's not say dissonance in the case of magnesium, it's just yeah. a signature.
Okay.
But in the body, let's say when I'm looking at dissonance, you know, someone could have had, let's say, an infection with Giardia, and it's gone now, but the signature of it is still mm-hmm. there. And it's reverberating and it's still throwing the body off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that through OCMOS, I can identify that and then select something, signature of something else that's in resonance with that dissonant piece of information
mm-hmm.
and draw it out of the system toward that, almost like toward a magnet.
Mm.
And previously you were asking, you know, what is resonance? What's dissonance? So it's like a great way to understand that concept is with tuning forks.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a tuning fork in the key of C and there was another one in the room in the key of C, if I were to strike this tuning fork, the other one would ring.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had one in the room that was in the key of A or the key of B, they would not ring. Mm-hmm. So the two key of C tuning forks would ring because they're in resonance with one another. And we're in resonance with our blueprint. And then we start accumulating these things in our body that create static, you know, mm-hmm. create chaos, and they grow off our ability to resonate with our blueprint. And it's almost like there's something in the way. It's like you can, so there, I can come up with an analogy, but does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it brings to mind even when you were talking about needing to be grounded and where you were feeling mm-hmm. you had, well, you didn't even know, maybe subconsciously you were experiencing this chaos that you're speaking to, the static that you're speaking to, and you needed to be more grounded in your body. And that, all what you just said also brought me to thinking about a conversation we just had with Roland McCrady from Heart Math Institute.
Oh, I like him.
Yeah, about the way that the human body resonates, vibrates at the same frequency as Earth, 0.01 hertz. And that when we're not grounded, literally in that coherent, resonant state, where we're feeling joy, bliss, gratitude, the things you've described in this conversation, being the positive state of humanity, we are not resonating with Earth. We're literally not grounded, you know, mm-hmm. into the ground here. So that's just really fascinating that you have tools that can show you the places in us that we're experiencing this type of dissonance. I think that's really neato.
Yeah, it's and along that line, like with the Lecker antenna, I can see if the person's energetic field has that 7.8 hertz frequency there mm-hmm. or not. Mm-hmm. Like I can literally measure, like, are they grounded? Are they receiving that nurturing vibration up from the earth, or is there something interfering with that?
That is so cool.
It's really neat. And then you were asking about, Mercedes was asking about the meridians. Mm-hmm. And so with the Acmos, a lot of times the dissonance will center in a certain area, and it often throws off a meridian or an acupuncture point. You know, the dissonance will kind of cause it, that point to not really be transmitting properly to the rest, you know, to the rest of the channel, let's say. And so then I'll pull out that dissonance, and that dissonance, while it was there, was throwing off the earth vibration frequency right at that point, or the cosmic vibration frequency at that point. So then I have to kind of establish those appropriate vibrations that are absolutely like essential nutrients to our being.
Yeah. Does ACMA stand for something?
Yeah, it's something like the assessment of the compatibility of matter and synergy. Something unusual.
Sorry, I didn't mean this is a test.
That's so cool.
I did want to ask you, because you just said when you can recognize in these people, these clients that you're working with, that there is a blockage in their channel, it made me wonder if you've had, and if you're open to talking about this, any of your own growth in your psychic abilities or intuitive abilities that lend themselves to that kind of nature that people aren't used to. They aren't used to really embodying, you know, for the most part. Jade, we have an in-house psychic here, so not all people, but I just wonder that because you're doing this work that's about getting people clear, literally, you know, and we talk about clairvoyance, we talk about claircognizant or any of these forms of psychic ability, if you've had any kind of that type of thing turn on for you in clearing these things out of you.
Absolutely. And you've said it so perfectly, because I think clearing out the dissonance clears the way for access to more information. So one of the things I talk about, I'm writing a book, and one of the things I talk about in my book is that there's some interesting research to suggest that thoughts and memories are not necessarily in our brains. They're not located in our brains, but they're imprinted in space memory. And so in the field around us, and our brains act like radio receivers and radio transmitters. So, you know, people might say, well, if you get a stroke in the area of your hippocampus, it's already, we know, because we see clinically people's memories are deficient after that. That's true. But that part of the brain may be acting more like a radio receiver. And so what I feel like is some people, as they start clearing the way, you know, can start to access like a broader band of information.
Yeah.
So you can access your memories, and you might even be able to kind of like broaden that out or switch stations at will, you know, so you might, like, you could almost say that your set of memories and everything are like a, and thoughts are like a particular radio station that's unique to you, and you might be able to tune into to someone else's. And so, and I really believe that it, clearing the dissonance is the way that you access more information.
Yeah, that's really cool. What's the, where did space memory come from for you? Is that a certain type of research or book? Or
it actually is a physics term.
Okay.
We used to call the field space time. But it's actually more accurate to call it space memory. You know, things are imprinted in the field much like things get imprinted in water. You know, water retains information. So does the kind of fabric of the unified field. And that, you know, people talk about Akashic records, and I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but you know, it's
we've had them read here on the show.
Oh, cool. It's literally like all things that have happened and all thoughts that people think and all memories that they have are imprinted in the field.
That's so good.
Very cool. Yeah, there's so many directions that I would love to dig in deeper with you on it when we have more time, maybe another time.
We're coming to the end, but we have a Magic Mob question. Jude has two questions. The first is, what is your most effective tool to defy aging?
Meditation.
Yeah?
It's the best kept anti-aging secret.
I love that.
Inside totally and out.
I just had a session with my therapist before I got on this call, and I had a big movement, you know, whatever you want to call that, an epiphany, or, you know, I moved something. And the way that I feel after that type of clearing is definitely younger.
So,
just doing that type of inner work or something where you have... And meditation is a great way to get there too, which I
like that it's so inexpensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like a costly cream.
So like stem cell or something.
Yeah. And so the other question that we have is about really your hormonal research, and you've spent a lot of time there with bioidentical hormones. Maybe you can just give us and our audience a glance into, I know this is going to sound like a really basic question, but I don't think our audience, I know, I don't think generally the world, but including our audience, we have a very eclectic audience. So I'm sure some of them are extremely savvy in this realm, but what are the basics that could get people interested in looking more deeply into their hormones and making sure that they're regulated, making sure that they're working. Yeah.
And maybe how can we keep them regulated?
Yeah. Just some of the basics.
That's my big question.
Because I think it's like, it's the area of medicine that seems, maybe it seems too overwhelming, or it's, maybe we just think of it, oh, sex hormones, and we just put it, oh, that means, you know, something that they thought they already knew about. But to me, hormones is like the most fascinating science.
You have anything for us? Me too. I mean, that's why I dove so deeply into it for so long. It's absolutely so fundamental to how we feel to have the appropriate hormone balance. And so for me, it's all about balance. And a lot of times people that you know, go to doctors that prescribe a hormone, they're really kind of singularly focused on one thing, mm-hmm. you know, or two things. And to me, it's about the balance of the whole terrain. Mm-hmm. So when I measure someone's hormones, for example, I'm looking at pituitary hormones, thyroid, adrenal, the sex steroids, mm-hmm. all at once, but I'm looking at the balance of everything. And so Jade was saying, you know, how do you keep your hormones balanced as you age and all of that? You know, I'd say one of the most important things is to keep your adrenals really healthy, mm-hmm. because your adrenals produce a lot of the hormones that can decline with age if you're under excessive stress throughout your life. Mm-hmm. And these hormones, let's say cortisol, DHEA, pregnenolone, testosterone, they're so important for our brain functioning, for our immune system, for our body composition, and for our energy level. And then the adrenals have the ability to produce, let's just talk about women, mm-hmm. some of the same steroids that our ovaries produce. So as we're going into perimenopause, the adrenals really try to pick up the slack.
Mm-hmm. So I had that.
Yeah. So if you go into perimenopause and your adrenals are weak, and then your ovaries kind of start functioning in an erratic manner, it's like a double whammy. Mm-hmm. You know, so you really can bottom out. But instead, if you go into perimenopause with super strong adrenals, you can often weather the changes quite gracefully. So, and then it's very important to look at the thyroid in the context of the adrenals and the ovaries, because the thyroid will often go through changes at times of changes with the sex steroids. So like at the onset of puberty or with a pregnancy or after you deliver and you start breastfeeding or when you stop breastfeeding or when you go into perimenopause. Those times when the ovarian steroids shift can have a bearing on your thyroid and can throw it off mm-hmm. sometimes. So a lot of times women go into perimenopause and they're feeling poorly, and you know, maybe they go see a doctor who's just focuses on the estrogen and progesterone, but doesn't really look at the fact that their adrenals are weak and not contributing anything to the total, you know, amount that they have in their system. And that at the same time that their thyroid got thrown off, mm-hmm. you know, and now they're hypothyroid and they start blaming everything on the loss of estrogen, and mm-hmm. they replenish that, but lean so heavily on just that they end up having to use very high doses when they wouldn't have had to if they had looked at the entire terrain.
Hmm. Yeah. And then applied lifestyle changes.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. We want to take a pill.
What's the best thing that can be done for our adrenals?
So depending on the individual, because I'll recommend different things to different people, but ashwagandha is an incredible adaptogenic herb that is super strengthening to the adrenals. It's been shown to heal the adrenal cortex and also calming to the nervous system. Mm-hmm. So like if someone has adrenal fatigue, but they're kind of wired as well, you know, they're mm-hmm. tired during the day, but they don't sleep well at night mm-hmm. and they're kind of anxious, that ashwagandha can be an awesome choice for them.
Okay. Is that also for, I mean, as men, would you recommend the same thing for men?
Yeah, I would. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And what's the, I'm going to turn this into my own little doctor appointment right now, just for the moment. I have, so I've heard great things about ashwagandha. So, okay, I have some, and astrologus, you know, I have these different things, but I'm like, I get them and I'm like, now how do I use them? Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do exactly. So how specifically would you recommend, like, for instance, a Jade and I, who we struggle with some dips and ebbs and flows in our hormonal cycle. We're in our mid-30s, so that's probably right around the age of perimenopause, starts kicking in. How do we treat ourselves with this herb?
So I like it in liquid form. I like it in capsule, but usually one capsule, let's say, twice a day. And mm-hmm. so morning, and most people can take it at bedtime just fine, and it actually mm-hmm. helps their sleep. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, someone feels like it's a little energizing to them, mm-hmm. and it'd be better for them to take it in the afternoon.
Yeah.
But one twice a day for a while, and it can often calm anxiety, help sleep, strengthen the body, even out the energy.
Level things out.
Now, for occasionally, someone finds it too calming, and then mm-hmm. that could make them feel almost like a little sedated or something. Okay. So everyone's unique.
Right.
And yeah. So I usually get a kind of read on
the take mine at noon because it's a tad bit of a pick-me-up for me.
Is it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It differs for each person. Yeah. But generally speaking, people find that it's strengthening but calming to the nervous system.
Hmm.
And then adrenal glandulars can be really helpful that don't have hormones in them. You know, it's kind of analogous to our grandparents' generation that would eat organ meats when they would eat. You supply the nutritional building blocks to build the gland back up. And then, of course, just stress reduction techniques, making sure you're including salt in your diet, you know, in your food. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I awesome. Take actually a supplement for organ meats because they're really hard to find for some reason. Like the actual
grasslandmeats.com.
What is it?
Grasslandmeats.com. You can order them. Actual organ meat. They'll send it to you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I was like, what? But yeah, I think that there, just to reiterate this, I know we've said it a lot throughout this episode, because here we just talked about some pills, you know, you can take to help this thing, or some herbs you can take, which are beautiful. And please do that instead of taking other, you know, Xanax or whatever it might be to mask your ails. But again, looking really deeply into mm-hmm. your own self, you know, into your own shadows, and digging out what's there is probably the most powerful tool for getting to the bottom of all this.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So before we let you go, there are a few short questions we like to ask everyone who comes on the show. So first off, if you could hug your younger self right now, what would you say?
Just say you are beautiful just as you are, and I love you.
Mm-hmm. And how old are you when you're hugging yourself?
Good question. Four.
That's sweet. Mm-hmm. If you could have the whole world read one book, which would it be?
The Power of Now.
Mm. Oh, I just started rereading A New Earth. So
I love that one too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could whisper one phrase to everyone on the planet, what would it be?
You are a child of God.
Mm. I love that. I felt peace in my heart when you said it. Before we let you go, where can people find you online?
Clearcenterofhealth.com.
Awesome.
Clearcenterofhealth.com. Beautiful. And by the way, awesome. You guys go on there, you're going to see all the different modalities that she offers, which are you got to take a course just to know what you're getting into.
Yeah, it's so cool. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thanks for having me.
This was really beautiful. I love the way that I know I said it earlier, but the way that you're able to articulate the information you're putting across is really unlike anyone else I've ever heard really on these specific topics, which I feel like, you know, we've addressed some of these topics before, but this is just a whole new perspective to look at it from. And it really, to me, is beautiful because it gives a new layer of clarity that's really needed, because these are very complicated topics that we're talking mm-hmm. about here. So I appreciate I know tons of work that you must have put in over the last 20 years of your work in this to get so clear and articulate on these topics. I appreciate that. Thank you for being a light.
Thank you so much.
All right. That was a lot of information. It was all so awesome though. And most of that stuff I've never heard before though.
Yeah.
That's what's so crazy about it. Like, I've never heard of the term, until I heard her talk, I've never heard of the term blueprint or structured water.
Yeah, that's what I meant. She's using, you know, her terminology is so unique to her signature, which is cool because mm-hmm. that's kind of what she speaks about. Mm-hmm. And even though it's concepts that we may have like brushed before or thought of before, they're out there, of course, they've been thought of, but she's put it into language that helps my brain understand it from another little facet.
And so it gives you such strong visuals, the way she says it, you like, you get you the visual, it. Which is really cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
what
you want my magic trick or you want to go first?
You know what? I'll go first because I know mine's very much in line with what.
Okay.
Excuse me. I'll go first because mine's very much in line with what she was speaking on about water.
Okay.
Which I find freaking fascinating. So you've likely heard about Dr. Masaru Emoto's water experiment. This happened a long time ago now, but where he photographed water droplets under a microscope after exposing the water to different types of music, and also by taping words like love or hate to water bottles overnight and then photographing how the water had changed. And in his study, he showed truly miraculous results where the water that was exposed to the word hate and with water that had been exposed to heavy metal music, they both had these like scattered, uneven, almost angry looking shapes under the microscope, whereas the water that he had labeled with the word love and the water that was exposed to a Mozart symphony both had symmetrical, unique patterns that looked much like a beautiful snowflake. And maybe most amazingly, he recorded the extreme difference that occurred when water was prayed over. So and in his best-selling book, it's called The Hidden Messages in Water, he pointed to the fact that our human bodies are made up of around 65% water, which is also what Dr. McDougall spoke about today, as is the planet. The planet is covered, obviously, with much more water than it is land. So to sum that up, he showed how the influence of our thoughts, words, and feelings can positively affect and impact the earth and our physical health. So my magic trick today is simple. It's to say thank you to the water you drink. That's it. If you really want, you can say, I love you. You can say, you know, something positive to your water. And if this crazy old Japanese scientist is right, just doing that may start a positive ripple effect in your life, beginning at the cellular level with the way your body aligns with the water you drink.
I believe it.
I mean, after we heard what we heard today on the show.
I don't pray over mine, but I will start. But I do write, I put a smiley face on the bottle, on the like the reusable Whole Foods thing. And then I put blessed water. But I will start praying over it. That's really a good idea. And saying thank you.
Yeah, what's your magic?
Mine is hugging a tree. So
as cliche as it sounds.
I know. But like you hear it and it sounds so hippie, like a tree hugger. But it really does have health benefits. So hugging a tree increases levels of the hormone oxytocin. And this hormone is responsible for feeling calm and emotional bonding. So you think about like, even when you're not hugging a tree, when you're around nature, you're kind of, like you said, you're already feeling that. Yeah. So imagine if you went up and hugged a tree. So when hugging a tree, the hormone serotonin and dopamine are also produced, which are, you know, what makes us feel happy. And it is important to use this free space of a forest we were given by nature to holistically heal ourselves. And I know, you know, some people feel like they live in a concrete jungle like Hollywood or New York. But if we can find a way to, you know, get immersed in nature, there is so many health benefits. And there's also another thing that I read was that they release antimicrobial essential oils called fintensides that protect, so that they protect trees from germs and have a host of health benefits for people. And we actually get that on us when we hug a tree. So that was really cool. And then lastly, according to Taoist masters, trees we know that they absorb carbon dioxide and change it into oxygen. That's why we need trees. But they absorb, the Taoist belief is that they absorb negative energy from us when we're hugging it, and send it back to us into a positive energy. So it's like recycling it for us the way that it does carbon dioxide into oxygen. So that's the Taoist belief. There was also like a bunch of studies when I was researching this. There was a ton of studies about the effects it has on ADHD, anxiety, and depression. But they were even wanting to call ADHD, they were wanting to call it nature deficit disorder instead, because they were saying that most children who have ADHD do not spend time in nature. They're on screens, they're doing other things that's causing their ADHD. So it's really a nature deficit disorder, because if these children were instead outside spending time in nature, around trees, then it would actually get rid of those symptoms.
I agree with that 100%.
And I do think I'd never heard of that before.
I love nature deficit disorder. But I have that right now, actually. I think it's a global disorder right now is going on with the pandemic. I was going to say that I know that, of course, trees, which have been here far longer than humans, by the way, have to have this incredible wisdom that we can't even fathom or understand the language that it speaks. And I was reading something the other day, I don't remember where it came from, but it talked about how the root systems under the ground miles away can speak to other trees through the tree other tree root systems under the ground, and basically communicate that there's a fungus on its way to you, or there's something negative, for instance, that's coming your way. And so that by the time that whatever this mold or whatever the thing is gets over to the trees that have been warned about it, they've produced, like what you're talking about, a certain oil or a certain something that will protect them from that, which is amazing. I mean, they've created really an immune system.
And then there's the Cosmos episode about how we share DNA with a tree. That episode is really cool. Yeah. So I would recommend you go listen to that if you enjoyed this magic trick.
I love it. Go hug a tree, y'all.
Yeah. All right, Magic Mobbers. Thank you so much for tuning in and taking this journey with us. If this episode held some magic for you, please share it with your friends and family. This would mean the world to us. And don't forget to join us on our Instagram page at The Magic Hour and let us know what your favorite episodes have been so far. We appreciate all of your feedback and want to know what's lighting you up.
Yes, and we release a new episode every Monday, so you can catch us again next week or go listen to some of our past episodes in our podcast library now. Until then,
be a light.
Quick disclaimer. We are not medical professionals, so following any of our protocols or advice should be done at your own risk, people. And please remember to always, always do your own research. Tap into that extraordinary growth mindset we all have access to within ourselves and seek out your own answers. Come on, guys, you know the deal. And by the way, if you are a medical professional or an expert in any topic we cover and you feel we are not giving accurate information about it, please find somewhere to contact us. Contact us via social or email us at our website and let us know. A major goal of ours in doing this podcast is to bring value to people's lives by sharing helpful insights and info. So we welcome being corrected at any time, and we'll be happy to share any of our fuck-ups with our listeners so as to get us all back on track to discovering our happiest, healthiest selves.